From the team at CTS, this is the Time Crunch Cyclist Podcast, our show dedicated to answering your training questions and providing actionable advice to help you improve your performance, even if you're strapped for time. I'm your host, Coach Adam Pulford, and I'm one of the over 50 professional coaches who make up the team at CTS. In each episode, I draw on our team's collective knowledge, other coaches, and experts in the field to provide you with the practical ways to get the most out of your training and ultimately become the best cyclist that you can be. Now, on to our show. Welcome back, or welcome to the Time Crunch Cyclist Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Adam Pulford. In response to a listener that wrote in with some constructive criticism about my use of the term quality training in a past episode, I wanted to address what I meant by quality. As I started to draft up an outline, some pretty basic questions started to arise, such as, what's the difference between high quality training and other training? What makes training have quality, and how do we even know if training quality is high? So to help answer some of these questions, I brought in national award-winning journalist and writer for Outside Magazine's Sweat Science column, Alex Hutchinson. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Adam. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Now, Alex, you've actually been on the show before several years ago. Since then, we've rebranded the podcast. The world has had a pandemic. New marathon world records were set. And I think you've been writing a new book. Am I right?
I've been working very hard on the book. It seems like pretty much forever, but I got a first draft in a couple of weeks ago, and I'm now working on revisions.
Awesome, man. Well, we'll talk more about that at some point, but, you know, I'm thankful, you know, you took some time to talk with our audience. As I was saying before, time is of the essence. So, really thank you for taking time out of your life and your busy time to come and chat with us. But when you're not writing books, you are writing for the Sweat Science column and Outside, as I alluded to. You wrote an article on training quality late last year, I think it was, right?
Yeah, it was last fall.
Yeah, okay. And I think it's best to just really pick up right where you left off. And toward the end of the article, you provided a quote from Thomas Haugen, the Norwegian sports scientist, and I'll read it right now. Training quantity means nothing without training quality. And for now, the best way to improve quality might be to just keep talking about what it means. So I figure we just keep the conversation going. What do you think?
That sounds good, because there's a lot to talk about and more questions than answers, let's say, at this point.
Yeah, I think so. And so to bring some context, audience members can write in and ask whatever questions they want. And I was talking about a heat training protocol. And in there, I was like, okay, do your heat. I don't even remember what I said, but do your heat training and then make sure that your training quality remains high and move on from there. If training quality goes low, then you need to adjust, blah, blah, blah. And so as I look back on that, I think I was referring to quality, meaning like intensity. But the first question I have for you is it too simple to call quality intensity?
Yeah. I mean, look, words mean what we want them to mean. So I think in that sentence you just said, I would have understood that what you were saying is like, right, if you can't maintain the pace, that, so I would have understood quality as intensity. But I think there is a separate concept, which we would also think of as training quality, that is definitely not just the same as going harder or as how hard you're going. And I think all cyclists, all athletes, all coaches have an intuition of like, that was a good workout, that was a bad workout. And it's sort of like there's that famous, I think, of the Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart in a case on pornography, like, how do you define pornography? Let's, I know it when I see it. Yeah. And we all have intuitions about what a good workout or a bad workout is that go beyond like, did I go fast? It's like, you know, I mean, and the classic example would be like, you assign someone supposed to go out for an easy ride and they end up racing with someone and just absolutely take it to the wall. No one's going to, like, we're all going to say that wasn't smart. Like, if you have a race two days from now or a hard workout tomorrow, and you just took what was supposed to be a recovery ride and, you know, smashed yourself, that wasn't high quality. That's an easy one. But then when you start going beyond that and say, okay, well, let's pin down, what does it mean to have a high quality workout or to do high quality training? it gets surprisingly difficult to pin down what we mean by that.
It is. I mean, and as a coach sitting here doing this for over 18 years now, being an athlete before that, I mean, we do throw around that term quality training quite a bit. And as I said, like, man, I started to really shape this up. I'm like, oh, I'll bang this, podcast out. Here's going to be my main talking points. I'm like, shoot, I need to do a little bit more research here. Started poking around. I found Hagen's paper, but it also led me to your article. And I'm like, I need to reach back out to Alex because this is going to be a very good topic. So I would say to take those two bits of writing, your own article, as well as Hagen's paper, the basic premise that I pulled out of that was Hagen was talking about having a process and having a result. And that process is kind of the how and why you're doing something to reach a result. And then the result is the what you did and how well you did it as it relates to the process. And so, that gets a little confusing in itself because it's in my head. I just visualize it's like process at the top, result at the bottom with a arrow pointing here and an arrow pointing here in a circular fashion. Visually, do I kind of have that correct as far as you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good way of thinking of it. I guess I would actually zoom out a little bit more and say, we want to start with the sort of the broadest definition of training quality, what it means is, did this workout contribute in the most effective way possible to the ultimate outcome that you care about? And that's a race that there may be a race that's 2 weeks from now. There may be a race that's 3 months from now. There may be a race that's 5 years from now that you're hoping to qualify for, or you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So you have goals on a hierarchical array of goals, and you're hoping that the workout you did is going to be the right workout that will do the most possible to get you towards that goal. And this is a philosophical thing, right? Because there's no way of knowing whether the run that I did this morning was the right run for me to run well at, you know, a cross-country race 6 months from now. But we have to, even though we can't test that empirically, that's what we're aspiring to have the right workout. And then once you say, okay, well, what's the right workout? Well, there is no single right workout. The right workout can only be defined in the context of your overall training plan. So, it's not just about following the plan, because your plan has to be good. And then there are different ways of getting to that, or different plans. So all of a sudden you have like seven different variables. It's like, what is my training plan? And within that training plan, is this the right workout? And is that leading towards the right? So I'm totally confusing matters here. So I apologize. No. But yeah, when we're talking about process and outcome, it's like, it has to be framed within like, what are you trying to achieve? And what means are you trying to, what is the approach you're using to try to achieve that competitive or fitness goal?
Yeah. I don't think it's confusing in this way, because I think like, as I look on like, physiology and coaching and athleticism, it's like really that process, we can like loosely define it as like the annual plan, the monthly plan, or even the daily plan, right? The mesocycle, the microcycle, and the workout of the day, right? That's all part of the process. Then you go do the workout, and then there's this result of, you know, did I hit the pace? Did I hit the power? Did I achieve the goal? Did the perceived effort, or what I recently have been calling the real feel of the workout, did that match the prescribed rate of perceived effort on a scale of 1 to 10 intensity, right? And then that feeds back into, did it, you know, check the box of the process. So I would say the system of what you and Hagen and some of these others are talking about, it's all stuff that we're practicing on a regular basis as coaches and athletes, but putting framework behind it and putting some mutual words, around it really helps to make high quality training contextualized so that we can all speak the same language.
And I think it's an important point to make that it's not like coaches have never worried about training quality. Of course, I mean, that's their fundamental,
yes.
Like that's their goal, is to have high quality training. So, but it's, there's this sense, especially in this, you know, in this modern age of data and analytics and things like that, there's the cliche is that what gets measured gets managed. And I think that's that you can extend that and say, actually, that can be a problem, because then you end up only worrying about the things that you're measuring. But in this context, if we want training quality to be taken seriously, if you want to be focusing on doing high quality workouts, maybe you can't measure quality, but you at least need to be thinking about what it is, so you can understand whether you're getting close to it or not. Because the risk is, if you're not thinking about training quality, you're only thinking about training quantity or intensity, then you're analyzing all your metrics about how much mileage did I do last week, how fast did I do it, what was my average power, and you're letting all those considerations crowd out the question of, like, was this the right workout? Did I execute it correctly? When I read Haugen's paper, it's a slippery concept, as I've already sort of, you've seen me talking around in circles here. I found it maybe not confusing, but just hard to get a handle on. And so I was trying to think, well, how do we operationalize this? And my sense was, like, the clearest thing that I could come up with was the intention execution gap, which is what you were just referring to. Like, you go into a workout, you have some sense of what you're trying to do in that workout, and you have some way of evaluating how close you came to what your intentions were. So if you went into a workout and it was supposed to be a threshold workout, and you wanted it to feel sort of like a 7 out of 10 workout, then if you went out and just jogged, and, you know, I come from the running background, so pardon if I use running rather than cycling. If you went and jogged and it felt like a 5 out of 10, well, that's a failure in some sense. You didn't do what you were supposed to. Same time, if you went out and raced, because let's say you had a training partner who was in great shape, and you did 9 out of 10 effort for that workout, that's also a failure. And so in either case, you can say, I was 2 units off what I intended to do. And so I think that's one way of operationalizing it. But when I asked Haugen about this, he was like, yeah, that's one element of it. Did you stick to the plan? But if your plan sucks, that's not necessarily a victory. So that's why you have to incorporate the larger concept of having a good plan. And then he also said, it's like, sticking to the plan isn't always, like, the best thing to do. You know, let's say you're fit, you're feeling great, it was the right time. Did you take advantage of this moment to get in 2 more reps? Or conversely, if you were tired and starting to feel, you know, you were struggling a little bit, did you back off at the right time? So the right workout isn't just a question of doing what you plan to do, because that depends on whether you have a good plan. It also depends on understanding when things are changing, and when it might be better to adapt the plan.
So 2 things stand out to me there. One, what if your plan sucks? Let's put that aside for a quick second, because that's a big question in itself. And then the second thing is, like, how to adjust, say, like, on the fly, right? In the moment. And that's awareness, I think. That's a highly aware athlete. But once you're aware of, I feel good, I don't feel good, now what? What do you do? I think with my athletes anyway, I refer to it as, like, self-determined training. Give them some scenarios of, like, if you feel this way, here's the workout. If you're feeling this way at this point, divert here. If you feel this way at this point, divert here. And so go back to your threshold run, for example. If you're not feeling great, if you warm up, you do a couple strides and you're, like, getting into it and you're like, ooh, my legs are heavy and then just not, like, turning over, what should I do? Well, jog, right? Run at that 5 out of 10. Let's save the threshold work for another day, for example. Right. That's one way that I kind of guide them through a self-determined training when I can't be there as a remote-based coach. Second thing is, if we're doing, like, some steady state running, so longer threshold, maybe like somewhere between 10K half marathon pace, and I'm just looking for time and zone. For cycling, it may be like extensive threshold development work, something that where I'm working on extending their FTP, for example. And say I've got 3x12 on there, and they're feeling really good. It's like, man, I feel like I could just crush, like, I'm going to crush this workout, but I could do more. What should I do? I say, extend the intervals, go up to like 15 minutes each, try to accumulate time in zone, right? and maybe you'd like sandwich one of those intervals together, right? So you do like one long one and then, you know, like a 10 or 12 afterwards. So that's some of that self-determined training that I like to implement in my coaching practice. I don't know. Is that something that you found with Haugen when you talked to him, or that, is that anything else that you've thought about, wrote about?
I think that's high quality training if you can execute right. that correctly. Now the tricky thing then is, you know, how do you know if you're feeling good? And I think there's different personalities, right? I've certainly trained with people who are always itching to do more, even when it's not beneficial. And I've also trained with people who, not for long, because they don't last long in the sport, but who are always trying to do less. You know, who are, I'm a little tired, I better back off. Right. It's like, and so there's layers of like, and this is where having both subjective and objective data can be useful. If you're just relying on, is the pace right? Is the power right? Then you're not going to pick up if you're just feeling better or feeling worse. On the other hand, if you're only relying on your feelings, you might be like, well, I'm just feeling, it just feels so easy. Well, maybe that's because you're going too slow, right? Like you have to have right. some reality check, and you have to sort of understand and this is, I think, where coach-athlete relationships can be valuable, is to have an external voice, and in a perfect world, an external voice who understands how you're wired and whether you're the type of person who needs to be held back or pushed forward or, you know, encouraged to make adjustments or encouraged to stick with the plan initially. So, you know, it's tricky, but I think this gets it is one element of what gets at the heart of quality training, is recognizing how to adjust when you need to adjust, that there's more to coaching or to training than to writing something down on a piece of paper and then executing it.
Yeah, couldn't agree more with that. And something that I tell my athletes often is, I want a highly actualized athletic individual. I don't want a robot, which means if I write the training, don't just blindly jump off the cliff, right? Following the program. Like if you see something, divert.
And that's, I mean, sorry to jump in, but yeah. that's a hallmark of high quality training, but it's also ultimately what the skill you're trying to learn for racing. Mm-hmm. It is, because in the race, you're going to have to make those decisions yourself. And the more you've learned to tap into that ability to decide when you can actually throw the plan out and push harder, or when you need to dial it back. You learn to do that in training. So I mean, I think having that sort of high quality and adaptive training and responsive training is important for the long-term physiological adaptations, but it's also important for understanding where your limits are and learning how to push them.
And I think too, like for all of our listeners, like tuning in here, keep in mind, this is a lifelong pursuit for athletes. Like some of the best researchers and coaches are only now, I would say, producing some high quality papers. I mean, someone could probably reference, no, this paper from 1978, explore this, probably. But I think we're having better conversations about what high quality training is and the systems and methods that we use to do this. And with my athletes too, like I, for example, the last week, working with one of my world tour female athletes, she was at altitude camp. We're doing some aggressive training. I'm always like super cautious with altitude camps, especially with elites. Have all the time in the world, all the ambition in the world. How do we go, coach? Let's do more all the time, right? So we induce training. We get into it. We're like, is this too much? I'm working with our team director. I'm like, yeah, I think it is. We look at metrics, right? We look at HRV, resting heart rate. We look at the recovery whoop score, which in my opinion, throw that one out the door. The other two, okay, maybe. But then I'm like, what do you really feel like? And it's like, wow, I feel my heart rate just sitting here. Okay, rest day, right? As opposed to a 4 hour or whatever.
And that's, you know, you're looking at all these different sources of data, including subjective ones. And I think, you know, every time I write about stuff like HRV, heart rate variability and stuff, there's a desire, people want it to be the ultimate arbiter. We all want to know, like, can I just get a green light or a red light or an orange light every day that tells me whether to go? And it's like, no single indicator is really able to, in my opinion, to substitute for looking at a whole bunch of different indicators. I think for an in-tune athlete, like, their instinct, their intuition, their feelings is the absolute best thing. But it we're so full of the desire to delude ourselves or to trick ourselves into give ourselves permission to train harder or whatever, that it can be useful to have these objective data sources of data, even if they don't, they're not infallible and they're not, they have their sources of variability, but they can give you another sort of decision point to help reinforce the decision that, today's a rest day. Yeah. These are hard decisions, obviously.
Yeah. Super hard decisions. And I get excited with, if data can help us solve those problems, because again, remote-based coaching from afar, she's up at 2,000 plus meters in some island over off of Spain, and I'm here 6 hours apart, right? I'm going to rely upon data as well as communication to help get us there. And I did a couple podcasts with Jason Koop, one of our ultra running CTS coaches, and we referred to those elements of like HRV, resting heart rate, as small directional arrows to guide you toward an end decision, right? But all of the other context of what's the fatigue leading in, how does the athlete feel? These are other arrows that are more important. So yes, data, but also process, result, and a framework and a structure to help guide your decision making, I think is really what we're finding in this endurance athlete coach community of sorts.
Yeah. And I think, maybe another element to mention on this note that Thomas Hagen brought up is the importance of kind of learning from each step and debriefing and assessing. Yeah. So you want to know which data is useful for you. One way to figure that out is to, over time, be watching, to start with a descriptive approach to data, where you're trying to understand, you're going to make some mistakes. You're going to have some times where you push it too hard, or maybe don't push it hard enough, or whatever. You learn from that, and you look back, and you say, you know what? There were some warning signs here. I felt like crap, and it turned out I was right, or maybe the heart rate variability, or maybe something else was pointing that out. And so, taking the on a regular basis after workouts, after a given week of training, to assess how did this week go, what went well, what went poorly, what do I think is going on after a given race cycle or fitness cycle, that's an something that I hadn't really thought about is training quality. What is sitting down in front of a spreadsheet? That's not training quality, but to Thomas Hagen, that's part of training quality. If you're not learning from your experiences, you're not gradually increasing your ability to dial it in for future training cycles.
Yeah. And I think that, honestly, like I know I can do that better and more. I think the debrief after workouts, there's some tools, say on like Training Peaks and some other analytical tools that I use, but even that, like the green, yellow, orange, red on Training Peaks, meaning if I prescribe a workout for, 1 hour and the athlete does an hour and a half, it turns orange. So it's like one visual indicator that it's like something was not completely appropriate, but it's just pure volume, right? So there's like limitations there. Then the Training Peaks comment about how it felt, then looking at the prescribed workouts relative to their pace or power within it. So you can get in there and go granular. And I think that's good. I think as an athlete, you need to do that. In my opinion, like if you're a self-coached athlete, getting in there, looking at your data relative to what you planned and thinking about kind of like journaling, that's a really good way to do it. And you should do that after every workout, even like a zone 2 endurance workout.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like, I think where I came away from, after, reading these articles and thinking about it, it's a complicated thing. There's a billion facets to training quality. If there was one concrete thing that I would suggest to athletes, it's like, before each workout, have an idea of, not everyone has to do the same, but what I would say is like, effort out of 10. How hard is this supposed to be out of 10? And then after the workout, write down how hard it was out of 10. You should probably write down before the workout how hard you're planning to do it, so you can't, you know, reverse engineer that. Oh, I did exactly what I said I was going to do. And look, you're not always going to nail what you thought you were going to nail, and that's fine. It's not that it's not like you have to stick to that, as we said before, but you can start to look for trends, and that'll give you the sort of first, broadest, crudest sense of like, did I do what I was planning to do? And maybe, as we said before, maybe your plan is crap, but you can't even make that judgment until you know whether you're executing your plan.
Now to that question, Alex, how do you know if your plan is crap?
You'll 10 years from now, you'll look back and you'll know, I you know what, maybe I should have done more mileage. That's the only way to know for sure. No, I mean, it's interesting. Like, look, yeah. in running, the hottest thing these days is Norwegian double threshold training. Yeah. So it's a ton of like highly controlled lactate monitored threshold workouts. And it's more or less, in some ways, it's kind of like the opposite of what the conventional wisdom was 5 years ago, where it's like, don't do any threshold training. You should be either jogging easy or sprinting, you know, basically. And so it's like, so did everyone's highest quality workouts suddenly become their lowest quality workouts retroactively? It's like you were doing the wrong thing. I don't think so. I think there's many roads to Rome, and you know, like I, so this goes back to what we were saying. It's like you can't evaluate a workout in isolation. It has to be in the context of its plan, and there are different plans, and the plan that's right for one person might be wrong for another person. It's always going to be an inexact science, but you should have some rationale for what you're doing, and you should have some reason to believe that your plan is not crazy. I mean, in the last couple of days, I was rereading the training manifesto of Nils van der Poel, the speed skater who won the 5,000 and 10,000 in speed skating at the last Olympics. And you know, his training program is nuts. It's nuts. If Joe Schmo if he trains 5 days a week and then he goes and like parties 2 days a week or does whatever he wants, his training is insanely repetitive, insanely hard, insanely periodized. If Joe Schmo gave me that training plan, I would say like, man, you are an idiot. Get this. You know, you have not learned the first thing about any basic training. But he set the world record at both of his events and won the Olympics. So, you know, by definition, his training plan was good. I wouldn't have known that a priori, right? Like, you know, it turned out to be a good plan. And sometimes I think, you know, so he was going with what he strongly believed in. And he was willing, I think, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think he was happy to fail doing it in the way that he was confident was right, rather than just stick with the sort of tried and true conventional wisdom. So we all have to be careful about pronouncing, you know, what's a smart plan and what's a stupid plan. That said, we can look at the patterns of successful athletes, and we have some pretty good ideas of what's probably a good plan for most people.
Yeah. If you haven't read that manifesto, and I think I did a podcast, or at least I mentioned that, or we talked about it. Definitely go and read through it, because it's bonkers. It's brilliant. It's crazy, but
and it's very thoughtful, right? Like it's not thoughtful. That he has some sort of harebrained physiological plan and he did it. He's thought very carefully about for him, what makes him tick. And so one of the points he makes is like, for me, motivation was the hardest thing. He was a world junior champion who then stepped away from the sport, went and joined the army for a year, did ranger training. Like obviously motivation was hard for him. So finding ways of making the sport worthwhile or even tolerable for him was more important than like the balance of, you know, aerobic to anaerobic work or whatever. And he recognized that. And I think, you know, he correctly assumed that, you know, finding a plan that he believed in was more important than the details of the plan. Maybe he might argue that the details of the plan were important too, but I interpret it that it's as much a psychological document as it is a physiological document, I think. And it is just to triple echo your point. It's fascinating. You Google how to skate a 10K or half a 10K, Nils van der Poel, and you'll find his 60 page document, including his entire training cycle, like diary leading up to the Olympics.
And he only trained 5 days a week.
Trained damn hard on those 5 days. But, yes, but yeah, the whole time he's like the other 2 days, he would do whatever he wanted. Yep. He would go with his friends. He would have a social life. And, but he trained exceptionally hard on those 5 days.
Yeah. So how do you know if you have your plan sucks? I would say, based in my experience, some red flags to me is if you're always getting injured, that's a pretty good sign that look at your training. Okay. Because usually there's too much intensity or, maybe too much run volume for a runner, too much ride volume if you're a cyclist, and you're just not as durable to handle that high load just yet. And another one is if you're just always tired, right? That's also a hallmark of too much intensity. If you're just eyes bleeding all the time and you get back to your work desk or at night, you're falling asleep in the couch, check the training distribution of intensity, right? Because it's all contextually woven with what the end goals are, how much time you have, and then so many other aspects that we get into. But those are too tired, too sick, too injured. Those are three things that would indicate that you have a plan that sucks, in my opinion.
I think that's a good one. One that I would add maybe in a sort of longer term retrospective sense is if your training performances are always predict racing performances that are way higher than what you actually deliver in races. I think that's a common, we've all encountered workout heroes, and look, everyone's different. Not everyone has to have the same workout to race conversion, but there's some people who work at an extremely high level that they can never sort of match in relatively speaking in races. And to me, that's usually a pretty good indicator that they're leaving their races in training and that they're trying to win the workouts. So I don't know. I would add that as something to, unless your goal in life is to win the workouts, if your goal is to compete well, then if you're constantly training at a higher level than you can compete, then you need to think about whether you're pushing too hard.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. So to wrap this thing up, Alex, if our listeners, they're generally crunched on time, around 6 to 8 hours total per week, what's one or two things that you would strongly recommend for them to improve their quality of training?
Yeah. So I'd go back to this idea of an intention execution gap. Take the time to articulate to yourself, or perhaps even write down what you're planning to do in each session, and then assess how well you executed that. And I would suggest, if you don't already have a way of doing that, start with just something like a 1 to 10 effort rating. And that just gives you, it's not going to give you all the answers, but it's at least going to get you thinking about, did I do what I intended to do? And if not, why not? Maybe there was a good reason, but it starts the process.
Yeah. I like that too. And I think starting that process also starts to create more awareness of your training, more awareness as an athlete. And that is never a bad thing. I think the continual learning and growth that you'll get out of that is really good. Once you get organized and start writing down what you intend to do, see if what you did do matched the intention or not, then you'll start to see trends. If those trends lead you toward increasing your 10K or decreasing your 10K pace or improving it, increasing your functional threshold power, your VO2, whatever it is, that's great. If it's not, your plan might suck, right? So then you need to change it. You need to learn. You need to read more articles from Alex Hutchinson on Outside Magazine, right? You need to probably talk to your friends that you ride with who may have been riding or running longer than you, or find a good coach. No one knows everything, but together I do think that we can learn a lot more and provide better context and better information to increase your performance on your athletic journey. And that's really kind of the core of what we talked about today.
That makes sense to me.
Well, Alex, thank you so much for joining us today. And I really enjoyed our conversations, as always. Thanks for joining us on the Time Crunch Cyclist podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you want even more actionable training advice, head over to trainright.com/newsletter and subscribe to our free weekly publication. Each week, you'll get in-depth training content that goes beyond what we cover here on the podcast that'll help you take your training to the next level. That's all for now. Until next time, train hard, train smart, train right.